Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I have a treat for you today. I am so excited when I meet someone new on Vashon, and I'm blown away by the kind of background and the contribution they're bringing to our community. On the show, I've interviewed a lot of artists and writers, musicians, but I've also interviewed several executive directors, because the folks in our community who are managing our nonprofits are as creative as you can get. It's hard work. You have to be looking for opportunities. You have to be managing a variety of forces. You always have to be raising money. And you have to really represent the spirit of the nonprofit you're working for. So today my guest is the executive director, is that your role?
Yep.
At the Mukai Farm and Garden, one of my favorite nonprofits on the island. And I'd like you to meet Dr. Jade Keala Agua. I was practicing her last name because it's so beautiful and it's not ordinary. It represents a bit of her Chinese-Filipina background. We were talking before the interview about a bit of her story, and I want to tell you a bit about her background. But a lot of the Japanese immigrants who came to this country at the turn of the 20th century came through Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And so there's a strong tie between Hawaii and some of the Japanese communities here, and that's how Jade's family came over. So it's great, and it's kind of an interesting parallel since you're running an organization that is so deeply tied to the Asian American experience, and specifically the Japanese experience here on the island. However, before we talk about your role at Mukai and all you're doing and the fantastic stuff, I am so blown away by the Mukai Farm and Garden. I'll talk more about that, but it is a jewel on this island. But let me tell listeners about your background, because I did not expect to learn that you have over 20 years of experience in learning, organizational development, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And you bring a race-conscious, equity-minded lens to community engagement and nonprofit leadership. It's an amazing background. Recently, you served as Chief Learning Officer at the University of Southern California mm-hmm. Race and Equity Center. Mm-hmm. You've led trips to the Manzanar concentration camp. Mm-hmm. That always get a little choked up on that one mm-hmm. in California. And you served as a docent at the Chinese American Museum in Los Angeles. You are a doctor, and you hold a Doctor of Education in Educational Leadership from the University of Southern California. That is like an amazing wow. I have a doctorate in organizational systems and organizational development, and I went, oh my, I know what it takes to earn that one. And so how did we get to be so lucky to have you here on the island?
Oh, I feel so lucky to be here. Thank you. And thank you so much for having me today. My family was living in Los Angeles during the pandemic.
Ah.
And we had been thinking about leaving LA before it hit. My husband actually grew up in Shoreline, Washington. So there was a bit of a pull in this direction. And we just kind of left on a whim and rented a house on Vashon. We were familiar with it. It was a beautiful place, and it was really taking safety seriously during the pandemic. And that is what brought us here in 2020.
That's amazing. Our gift. And you were able to avoid the fires, right?
Yes, yes. We literally, that year, the fall of 2020, we drove through wildfires to make it up here. So it was meant to be, I think, to leave at that time. And I, even more so when I learned of Muukai and the Japanese, you know, and Japanese American history on the island, I had no idea until I moved here. And it was kind of like a sign, like, oh, this is where I'm supposed to be. Oh, there's some work I could do here, you know.
Fabulous. Fabulous. So. Well, it sounds like you've led some big efforts. I mean, leading the Diversity and Equity Center and stuff. Doesn't it seem a little small potatoes to be?
Oh, I think it's all a matter of perspective. I feel like a small potato. I feel like, aren't we all small potatoes? I don't know. But, you know, I would say perspective, I think, is the right word I want to stay with, because when I was working in higher education before, I wasn't only working at the University of Southern California. I was also working with other colleges and universities with their diversity, equity, and inclusion work. And you're so far removed from some of these campuses, right? I might be working with a campus in Florida or something and never see people in person that you are spending a lot of time with and a lot of effort with. And so to be able to come and work at Muukai and be in the community and see who you're serving and working with, I think it's really rewarding, and it doesn't feel small.
It doesn't feel small. No, it's not small.
Right.
But it's such a great background. I was just like blown away, because although Muukai isn't overtly about diversity, equity, and inclusion, mm-hmm. it really is.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I love about Muukai is that sense of bringing a piece of history out, mm-hmm. but making it very alive and relevant to today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that is about looking at the immigrant experience, mm-hmm. and saying, never again,
right.
do we want to have that kind of exclusion.
Yeah.
Never again do we want to lose our respect for diversity.
Right.
So even though that's a subtext, I think it's really important to the Muukai project as well, don't you?
Absolutely. And I think it's so important to the island.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really do feel like having the Muukai family home and, you know, the 5 acres of the original property is such a treasure to our school system and our community, to be able to visit there and learn about the history of our own community.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a little bit of a sidebar, but I have friends who have worked with diversity, equity, and inclusion pretty much all their career.
Mm-hmm.
How are you taking the recent changes? I mean, hasn't it been a heartbreak?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I mean, it's one of the reasons I wanted to leave where I was working, because higher education was under attack, you know, all of the anti-DEI efforts, all of the fear, all of the layoffs. I have just tens and tons of colleagues who are like fish out of water. You know, to see so much progress, especially after the murder of George Floyd and during the pandemic, to just see it all kind of roll back and come crashing down in the last couple of years is truly been hard on, I think, everyone's mental health, if you're paying attention.
Oh, I think it's horrible. And, you know, I can understand, because there are usually different points of view on really any issue. You could say, hey, are we really using the best approach? Are there other approaches? Have we gone too far in some areas and not far enough? But to actually attack it,
mm-hmm.
like the make it the enemy,
mm-hmm.
it was like crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, people, you know, who were working in it, having to scrub the words from their title, from their offices, right? And it's heartbreaking to know a lot of these places were hard fought, hard won, you know, departments on campuses, and for it to be made invisible again. It's been a really, I hope it all, like, slowly, the work doesn't end. Everybody's still working. We just have to call it different things.
And that's the weird part. Yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be DEI. You can change it to something else.
Right.
But but the world. I mean, it's kind of like, wake up. It's not even a choice. We are in a diverse world, and inclusiveness is what makes that world go round.
Right.
And equity is part of what we all believe in. We all deserve fairness.
Right.
In the way we're treated. So it's kind of like, why are we demonizing something? I mean, you can call it something different if you want, but don't demonize it. It's so weird.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. I'm talking today with Dr. Jade Agua, the executive director of the Mukai Farm and Garden. Now, Vashon, one of the criticisms of our beautiful island is that we lack the diversity of an LA. Mm. Has that been hard to adjust to?
Yeah, you know, certainly was something I was aware of when we moved here, especially with young children, just being worried about how exposed they would be to diversity and it being, you know, a core value of our family. But I think that as a lived experience as a person of color on the island, too, it's interesting to be one of a few. But I've not ever felt excluded or, you know, I'm fortunate to not have experienced any of that on the island. So I'm grateful. But it is an interesting experience to work at a Japanese-focused organization, but identify as Chinese and Filipino. Right? Because I could be easily, someone can assume I'm Japanese because why else would I work there? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it makes for good conversations. And generally, I think people on the island that I've interacted with, you know, are genuinely caring and curious and respectful in conversations.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't think the Mukai organization ever insisted that you be Japanese or Japanese American, although we've been blessed that there have been a number of board members and folks who are supporting the work that did have that heritage.
Yeah.
But it's not a prerequisite. What's important are the values.
Right, right.
And it sounds like you really embody those in spades. Talk a little bit about Mukai. We all know that, you know, truth in lending, I was on the original board.
Yes.
So I have a great fondness for the organization and everything it took to win back the property.
Absolutely.
But for someone who's not as familiar with the Mukai Farm and Gardens, what's it about? Is it just a house and a garden, or is it more than that?
Yeah. Oh, so much more. And thanks for asking. It certainly centers around the Mukai Farm and Garden property, but the Mukai family was the most successful Japanese and Japanese American farming family on Vashon, primarily strawberries, prior to World War II. And so if you can imagine, you know, they were able to operate at first by leasing because the patriarch of the family was not a U.S. citizen, but was operating 60 acres of strawberry farms at that time. And then when their son, Masa, who was born here and so was a citizen and could buy land, they purchased an additional 40 acres in Masa's name when he turned 15. And so this family was running 100 acres of strawberry fields on the island. They would aggregate from other smaller Japanese and Japanese American family farms, you know, invented a way to pack berries and ship them out himself. And so it's a really wonderful story of immigrant resilience and community. The family was kind of like a landing spot, you know, provided many jobs for all communities of color and other communities as well that would come to work in the fields. So we've been very fortunate to be able to restore the house and garden now. There's a beautiful, it's a lovely juxtaposition if you've never seen it. The home is kind of this traditional, quote-unquote, craftsman style, you know, built in 1926 home. And then next to it, a Japanese style garden. And really, really beautiful, designed by Kuni Mukai, which was unusual for women at the time to take on that role of designing a garden. But she was a very assertive strong woman. And so it's a beautiful juxtaposition that you wouldn't expect on a small island in the Puget Sound. Yeah, so that's a little bit about the grounds. Right now, you know, we are celebrating 100 years since the farmstead was established. And
this year?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, about 1926, they started building that house and their family home and the fruit barreling plant.
Right.
Yeah.
What's really interesting to me, I mean, I love the Mukai story, but as a nonprofit, and it's, you know, you could have an enterprise that was just maintaining a building,
and
that would be good. And there are a lot of historic sites where basically that's the job, is to maintain the building.
Yeah.
But Mukai has really been so much more than that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There's a spirit around it. Can you talk to that at all?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we find that the community likes to engage with us kind of in depending on what resonates with them about the Mukai story. One of them is certainly around Japanese culture and Japanese heritage. So we will host things like the Japan Festival, or, you know, Japanese movies at Mukai, or, you know, really anything that a community member wants to come forth and help plan. We're happy to be partners with about Japanese culture. Another might be just the history of agriculture on the island. You know, a lot of people wanting to see the barn and learn about, you know, the whole setup with the berries and what happened. Another is the gardens. So, for example, the master gardeners actually have a space on the site where they have really done a beautiful job planting some native Washington State and Japanese plants together. So it's a really kind of lovely metaphor for bicultural kind of cross-cultural harmony. Social justice is definitely another reason that folks, you kind of alluded to earlier, how the property was saved truly because a nonprofit that wasn't taking their stewardship duties as seriously had kind of kept the house closed off, literally with gates around it from the community. And we were able to kind of get it back. Give it back to the community and activate it in a way so that the community could really be a part of it and engage with it in these different ways. You know, yeah. You may not be, you know, it may not be all of the aspects of the Mukai family story that resonate with you, but certainly among those, there's something.
I love that. There's something, probably something for everybody here on the island. And clearly, you know, when Japan Fest, It's a mob scene in the best sense of the word. I mean, the whole 107th is parked up, and people are coming from off island.
Yeah.
And I noticed it looked like there was a Japanese community that was coming from off island to be witnessing and participating. It was incredible. And then recently there was the Plein Air Fest, which was amazing because there were like 60 people making art. And while I was there, because it was such a wonderful experience, I was watching the families, and the families were coming, and the kids were either making art or running all around or eating some of your food or whatever. But it was such a good vibe.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so family friendly, good-hearted art. It was just a wonderful community. Like, this is what we need to be doing. And then coming up soon is Haiku Fest, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's actually coming up this Sunday, April 26th. So we will have the haiku out on display starting at 2 p.m. And we're going to host a short program to kind of kick off what we call our Haiku Festival, where we have folks who have submitted their haiku to us from all over the world. This year we had almost 200 entries, which I think is more than last year, definitely. Maybe the most ever, I'm not sure, I'd have to check. From 9 different countries. It's really amazing. I'm like, how did this person in Romania know about our haiku festival? Those will all be out, and we're gonna have a lovely performance by some of our third graders from Chautauqua Elementary School. you're going to be doing a Japanese folk dance that Leah Okamoto Man choreographed, and then invited some of our local artists to come and read the haiku that they submitted to the festival.
Oh, how
so
lovely.
Yeah, it should be another, you know, good vibes, family,
oh, it's
friendly.
It's so great. And the fact that it's only, these things have only built over the years.
Yeah.
So what else is on the docket? Because some people mm-hmm. will, you know, have missed it when they hear this and will want to know what else,
sure.
what other kinds of things are coming up.
Yeah, we have a big event coming up in May. So on Saturday, May 16th, we will be observing the Day of Exile. And that was the day on Vashon where all of the Japanese residents were forced to leave their homes. There were 111. And we will be reading out all of the family names who were forced to leave as part of the ceremony. And this year is special because we have recently installed at Ober Park a Nikkei Memorial metal sculpture that local artist Mia Sukune designed. And it's really, really gorgeous. If you haven't seen it yet, it's right by the library, right in front of the Vashon Parks District building. Bright red. It's,
yeah.
Stunning.
I love that. I interviewed Mia a couple months ago.
Nice.
And I love these synchronicities because mm-hmm. here her family was Japanese and wasn't connected to the internment and mm-hmm. everything that happened, but she's been brought in
mm-hmm.
and has contributed her beautiful art mm-hmm. to the story,
mm-hmm.
which also feels so authentic and such a, you know, interweaving.
Oh my gosh, yes. And she really, you know, she depicts actual families from Vashon in the sculpture and shares their stories. And we're really pleased that we have something to mark that space on our island.
And that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Where is it going to be seen? Where is it?
So it's located in front of the Vashon Parks District building at Ober Park. And on the 16th at 11 a.m., we'll have a small ceremony to kind of introduce the community to it.
How fabulous.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it'll be up for forever. But, you know, I'm proud. I'm proud mm-hmm. that we can have, you know, that art and the memorial and the Mukai Farm and Garden and all. Wow. It's just so amazing. So what's it like to try and run a small organization on the island? Are you using your organizational development skills?
I'm trying to remember what I learned in all of my years of schooling. But it really just boils down to going with the flow, I think. And, you know, what you said earlier about having to be creative, I do think that that is a big strategy for not getting burnt out or, feeling uninspired, but really leaning into the community wants and needs and being able to meet them and serve.
It's also, you know, when I was teaching leadership, as you probably learned about, you know, there are top-down models that work in some kinds of corporations where you basically get to tell people what to do. It's kind of outdated.
But yeah.
It's definitely, I think in some of those high-tech companies, it sounds like it's still in play.
Yeah.
But I think it's a much more interesting and difficult model in a nonprofit where you're hurting people who are not working for you. They're working with you, and they're working at choice.
Yep.
And so they have to be respected. They have to be inspired.
Mm-hmm.
You have to figure out how to best use their talents.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't default to some of the other ways of, you know, I'm your boss. I'm going to tell you what to
do. Yeah, this is your job. And if you want to get paid, those aren't options available to you.
No. So really, you have to be a communicator.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be able to inspire people.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to work with a board that has diverse interests, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this is why I say it's incredibly creative.
It's true. But I've made 1 year on April 15th of being in this role. And it's really been a wonderful opportunity to utilize what I've learned in school, but also just coming back to being able to connect with people.
I think that
as much as I can lead with that, and that, you know, people genuinely believe that I am here to serve, you know, Mukai and its mission and the people who want to be a part of it. I feel like that kind of helps be my guiding star in the work.
Wonderful. And people feel that. And it also makes a difference when it comes to giving money and stuff. When you feel like this is us, this is our community, we're connected. It really does influence. You're a mom, right?
I am.
How old are your kids?
I have one almost 11-year-old. Sierra's in fifth grade, and then Jasper is 6 in first grade.
Oh my, how beautiful. How do you balance?
Oh boy. I mean, this is another benefit of being in a community organization is nobody bats an eye if they're with me, you know? Sometimes they have to be nearby during a board meeting or, you know, something important. And everyone is really lovely and accommodating and, you know, like to see kids on the property. So they actually have been an inspiration because I would work remotely at a laptop and they couldn't really understand what it was I did, you know, but now it's so tangible to them. They can participate in the programs that we're putting on and they can see the house and they can see the garden. And I think that it's just so much more valuable for them to be able to, I feel much more validated for them to see the fruits of my labor, you know?
I think it's totally great because I remember when I was a kid, I tried to tell my, you know, what does your daddy do? Well, he's a corporate planner and, you know, blank looks or right. My mom works in DEI, blank
right.
looks.
Right, exactly.
But to say, my mom works at that big house where we all went playing and we sat at the picnic tables and we had fun,
exactly.
You know, that is real.
Yeah.
So anything else you'd like to share with us about what's up with Mukai or coming attractions or just the...
We're celebrating 100 years, so we've had some special events happening, like the one coming up for the Day of Exile. We're also really focused on getting our fruit barreling plant renovated, so really looking forward to breaking ground this summer. We're going to be interviewing contractors and really locking in so that we can bring that building back into use to serve the community. We have some really great partners lined up to be in the space, including the Vashon Island Growers Association. So bringing back those agricultural roots. Fernhorn Bakery is another one that'll be in there. And then another organization or I guess small business. I'm not sure how to put it. There's so much more than that to me. Fuku Ferments, all of these entities, so much more have been partners in this project.
Who's the third? I didn't get the...
Fuku Ferments. So they are focused on fermented products. And
they've
taken a lot of time to study and learn in Japan how to do some of this. And they're really doing some wonderful work with local farmers to build a dry bean infrastructure so that they can source their materials locally or source their beans locally to produce their product.
That's incredible. I didn't know about them.
Yeah.
What an amazing cast for an agricultural building that's coming back to life.
Yeah. We're excited to kind of involve them more as the building begins to come online so that folks will know where they're, you know, making magic happen.
Yeah, and I know that the other part of leading a nonprofit is you have to be able to keep things going forward and be patient.
And that's true. Absolutely.
I had Lynn Greiner on the show a year and a half ago,
and
she's done so much grant writing, and somehow Lynn always manages to stay positive despite the, you know, occasional, you know, disappointments or government funding put on hold and the things that just are part of life. But she never loses her positive spirit about it all.
She's been a force, especially behind the fruit barreling plant, literally helped to raise millions for this project. So we're so grateful and excited to bring it to fruition.
To kind
of honor the work and the energy that she's brought to the project for sure. So many people.
Right. Well, thank you so much for the work that you're doing. Yeah, you know, Mukai Farm and Gardens is a jewel, and it's also a testament to what people on this island do when they put their heads together to create a volunteer organization that serves the community. It's quite amazing what we're able, given how small we are and what a tiny island and how few people really are here, that these incredible organizations have been created. And so, you know, shout out to Mukai Farm and Gardens. And there'll come a day, because I think Give Big is around the corner.
Oh, yes. It? Yeah, you'll hear from us a little bit more.
We'll hear some more. But you don't have to wait, because if you have, you know, have the inkling, or you hear, or you feel motivated or connected to the store, you don't have to wait to give big, to give big to the Mukai Farm and Gardens. And so thank you so much, Dr. Jade Agua. It's
thank
such
you.
A pleasure to get to know you. And
me
again,
too.
Thank you for all your work.
Thank you so much, Sally.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.